Rich Girls, Kirby here, and today we are going to do a deep dive into naming beneficiaries on your IRA. We'll be talking through the different types of beneficiaries, how they might be taxed on the money you leave them, and by the end of today's episode, you should know exactly where to start when naming beneficiaries on your IRA. This is Rich Girl's Guide, where we demystify the world of personal finance to help you create a financially successful and fulfilling life. I'm your host, Kirby Delacano, and I worked in wealth management for over 6 years before leaving the office to focus on my business and my family. Let's start with the obvious question. What exactly is a beneficiary? When you open any kind of retirement account or investment account, you have the option of naming a person or multiple people to receive the cash or securities in your IRA in the case that you pass away before the account is fully depleted. There are two main types of beneficiaries, primary and contingent. Primary beneficiaries are the first round of people who will receive your account. In the case that a primary beneficiary passes away before you do, the account holder, then the money will instead go to the contingent beneficiary. So think of primary as first and contingent as second. You are not intending for the contingent beneficiary to receive any money unless the primary beneficiary is not able to receive it. Now, some institutions will allow for a third round of beneficiaries to be listed, called tertiary beneficiaries, in the case that the primary and the contingent beneficiaries have predeceased the account holder. This is not super common, and in most cases, listing a primary and a contingent is more than sufficient. Let's go over an example. You, Susie, are the account holder and have $50,000 in your IRA. You have a husband and 2 children. You decide to list your husband as 100% primary beneficiary and your 2 children each as 50% contingent beneficiaries. Quick tip, your total primary beneficiary percentages need to total 100%. And your total contingent beneficiary percentages need to total 100% as well. If Susie passed away and all of her beneficiaries are still alive, then her husband will receive the entire $50,000 since he is listed as 100% primary beneficiary. If, however, Susie's husband passed away before Susie passed, then her 2 children would receive $25,000 each, 50% of the account. Let's continue on with this same example and look at the consequence of naming your spouse as a beneficiary. If Susie passes away, her husband is still alive and receives the full account. He actually has a few options. First, he can take over this IRA as if it is his own. This is a huge bonus that married couples receive that no other beneficiaries or family members get to take advantage of. Essentially, he can change the name on the account to his own, or even combine it with another IRA that he already has in his name. Now, they do need to be the same type of IRA, so if Susie had a traditional IRA, he can only combine it with another traditional IRA. A Roth IRA into a Roth IRA, etc. The reason this is a huge advantage is that your spouse, your beneficiary, is now able to delay withdrawals until RMD age, if they so choose. RMDs, otherwise known as required minimum distributions, are withdrawals the government requires us to start taking in our 70s. If you need a refresher on the topic or have no idea what I'm talking about, check out my required minimum distribution, episode 23. Now, Susie's husband has 2 additional options. First, he can take a full withdrawal of the account balance, pay any taxes on it up front, and then do whatever he wants with that cash. In this case, a $50,000 withdrawal is definitely a lot, but in the realm of retirement accounts, it won't be life-altering in terms of paying taxes or continuing to save for retirement. However, if the account was worth $500,000, he is going to incur a major tax hit by withdrawing all of it in 1 calendar year. Remember, withdrawals from a traditional IRA are considered ordinary income, so the taxes owed would likely be in the 35% range. Not to mention, as a married couple, you are likely saving for retirement as a team, meaning these funds are likely meant to help fund his retirement. The only upside here is that Susie's husband would be able to avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty, assuming he's under age 59 and a half. Remember, you cannot touch your IRA prior to age 59 and a half without having to pay Uncle Sam 10% of your withdrawal amount in the form of a penalty, on top of the ordinary income tax owed. The last thing I will say about taking a full withdrawal as a beneficiary is that the individual will lose the tax-deferred status of that money. Obviously, if you need to pay off a debt or need the inheritance urgently, it may make sense to take a withdrawal. However, if you are going to be reinvesting that money or plan to use it in retirement, it does not make sense to fully withdraw the account. The final option Susie's husband has is to claim the IRA as an inherited IRA. Now, this pretty much never happens and is definitely not recommended, and I will get into why that is the case in the next scenario. But I do think it is important to point out because this is an option that is available on the paperwork. If your spouse is not super knowledgeable when it comes to finance and they don't work with a financial advisor who will sit down and go over all of the options with them, it is incredibly easy to fill out paperwork incorrectly or choose this as an option if you don't know to look out for the spousal continuation option. Okay, so let's move on to the second scenario. Susie passes away, but her husband passed away a month prior. Susie never updated her beneficiaries, so her husband was still listed as primary beneficiary. This means her account will be split 50-50 between her two children, who are listed as contingent beneficiaries. They will only have two options. First, they can take a full withdrawal of their portion of the account. They will owe ordinary income tax, but they will also avoid that 10% penalty. Their second option, which is the more popular option, is to put that money into an inherited IRA. Also, as an aside, when you have more than one beneficiary, you do not need to choose the same option. One child could take a full withdrawal, while the other moves their half to an inherited IRA. Now, an inherited IRA works similarly to a regular IRA, with two major differences. You cannot make any contributions to the IRA. Only the money from Susie's IRA can be placed in an inherited IRA. And the entire account balance needs to be withdrawn within 10 years of the account owner's death. So if one of Susie's kids chooses the inherited IRA option, they will move their $25,000 into the inherited IRA. They will not be able to put any more money in it. All of the earnings and cash will build up tax deferred, and they will need to fully withdraw that money within 10 years. Now, the 10-year window actually starts as of December 31st in the year the account owner dies. So if Susie passes away in April of this year, 2024, her children would have until December 31st, 2034 to fully deplete the account. As of right now, there is no minimum annual amount that needs to be withdrawn. There was some confusion about this when the Secure 2.0 Act passed in 2022 because there was some added verbiage surrounding the 10-year rule, but it was extremely vague, and I believe lawmakers are actually still dragging this through the courts. All you need to know is that as of now, beneficiaries can take withdrawals as they see fit over those 10 years. Now, I'm specifically talking about inherited IRAs for those who passed after December 31st, 2019. If you were listed as a beneficiary for someone who passed prior to 2020, you have been grandfathered into what is called the stretch IRA method, meaning you have to take annual distributions spread out over your lifetime. Since that method is no longer available, I am not going to get into it in this episode, but if you guys have any questions, please drop a comment. Now, the reason I said before that Susie's husband should not opt for the inherited IRA option is that it limits him on what he can do with the funds from Susie's IRA. He will not be able to add to the account, and he has to fully withdraw the account within 10 years, as opposed to the spousal continuation option, which would allow him to make future contributions and delay any withdrawals until he turns 75. Now, what happens if you list a minor as a beneficiary? While minors can be listed, you will need to assign them a guardian, which is someone over the age of 18 that will make the financial decisions for the minor until they turn 18. This does not necessarily have to be a parent. Actually, in the case of Susie, she would be forced to list a non-parent as a guardian. Why is that? Well, if her two children are still listed as contingent beneficiaries, then the only way they are receiving that money is if both Susie and Susie's husband passes away. While you can list anyone as a guardian, since this does involve money, please choose someone that you trust to make the right calls and do right by your kids. Once the child turns 18, they will have control over the inherited IRA, and their 10-year window will start in the year they turn 21. Now, I do have to mention one other method of naming beneficiaries, and that is called per stirpes. Essentially, per stirpes was created to ensure that living family members would not be left out or forgotten by accident. If a listed beneficiary was deceased, but per stirpes was selected, their portion of the account would be split evenly between their living direct descendants, aka their children. Let's go through an example. Let's say Susie had listed her husband as 100% primary beneficiary, and she had selected per stirpes. If her husband passed before Susie did, but she never updated her beneficiaries, his portion would still be split evenly between their two children. What's more, if they had a happy surprise and ended up having a third child years after their other children were born, that third child would also be included, and now the three would be splitting their father's portion evenly. If Susie had instead not selected her stirpes, had listed her two older children as 50-50 contingent beneficiaries, and she forgot to add in her third child, the third child would actually receive nothing from that specific account. Now, when I was in college, it was beat into us that per stirpes was the way to go for folks who wanted to ensure that the correct family lines received what they were meant to receive. In practice, I have not really found that to be the case. When you list per stirpes on a beneficiary form, you don't have to fill out any personal information for the direct descendants, obviously, because you are leaving it open in case anything happens. What this means in practice for the financial institution is that they have no names, no birth dates, no social security numbers, and no contact information for these descendants. Not to mention, they don't know how many there are. This can leave an account open to possible meddling by other family members or even just strangers claiming to be a deceased owner's long-lost child. Now, hopefully it would get caught by the financial institution and no money would be given out, but you may need to go through some long drawn-out process and even get authorities and the courts involved just to eliminate that possibility, which in turn means it's going to take months or even potentially years before anyone sees the money from that account. As long as you remember to update your beneficiaries as life changes occur, and you are checking on them periodically to make sure everything is correct, you should be absolutely fine listing out individual family members. What happens if you don't list a beneficiary on your IRA? This is where estates can start to get costly and messy. If you don't have a beneficiary listed on your IRA, or all of your beneficiaries are deceased, then your estate will receive the liquidated assets from your account and will be distributed per your will. Whenever an IRA or any kind of retirement account has to pass through the will, the entire account will need to be liquidated. So any stocks, mutual funds, or other securities will need to be sold. Taxes will have to be paid on the full distribution of the account, and there are likely probate fees, lawyer fees, and other taxes that will have to be paid from the total estate bucket. All that to say, your beneficiaries tend to receive less of an inheritance if every account has to go through the will. Can you name an organization as a beneficiary? Yes, absolutely. It is actually quite common for people to name a charity or an alma mater as a beneficiary on an account. The only thing to keep in mind here is that typically you can only designate a percentage of an account as a beneficiary, not a flat dollar amount. So if you're looking to give a certain dollar amount to an organization, it may make more sense to have that listed within your will. If it isn't already obvious, I am a big proponent of listing individuals as beneficiaries on each of your accounts. But I do recognize that this might not be the best option for everyone. Let me go through some pros and cons of naming beneficiaries on your IRA. Pro, your beneficiaries will typically receive their portion of the money more quickly. Not only is it a pretty cut and dry process, Susie's husband receives 100% of this one account. They will be working directly with a financial institution that essentially wants this process to go as quickly as possible so that they can close out the account and call it a day. If Susie's spouse has the death certificate, he has all of his information handy and fills out the paperwork in a timely manner, he could see those funds in his name within 1 to 2 weeks. This is especially true if your IRA is held with a financial advisor that knows you personally. They will already know who your beneficiaries are, they will want to do good by you, and they want to give your beneficiaries a good impression to try and win their business. Anytime the courts have to get involved, you already know the process is going to be a lot more drawn out than that, and can take months or even years before beneficiaries receive their funds. Con. There could be a large estate bill with no clear directive on where the funds should be pulled from. Now, this is a bit of a unicorn. I have seen this happen, unfortunately, but I don't think that most people need to be worried about this. Essentially, if you, the IRA owner, racked up a huge tax bill, but all of your cash is held in IRAs that have named beneficiaries and there's no other property or cash to pay the tax bill, then who pays the tax bill? In the unicorn case I am thinking of, the deceased was scared of the market tanking and he ended up actually selling over $250,000 worth of stock that had capital gains of over $100,000.
No, God!
And come to find out later on, he had not paid his taxes the previous year. So he had quite a large tax bill when he passed. He had a handful of investment accounts and IRAs, and those all had named beneficiaries. He did not own his home, he was a renter, and essentially he had nothing else to his name other than these investment accounts. So the executor of the estate was in a bind trying to figure out who needed to pay this extremely large bill. Was it his responsibility as the executor, or was it the family who ended up receiving most of the inheritance? I actually don't know how that specific case was resolved, but I do know that it caused a lot of conflict within the family. So that is just something to think about. And again, something that I've only seen that one time. Pro, you are giving your beneficiary more choices. If they inherit your IRA, they now have the choice of keeping the money in the IRA tax deferred for some period of time. If they are in a pinch and they need money now, they can always withdraw a partial amount or fully deplete the account and just pay the tax on it. If you had instead named your estate as a beneficiary and all of that IRA money had to flow through probate, and then your beneficiary was named in the will, all of that money is going to be taxed up front, meaning your beneficiary is now going to receive all after-tax money. Of course, they can put this money in an investment account, but they cannot roll this money into an inherited IRA, meaning they have completely lost their ability to keep these funds tax deferred for any length of time. Not to mention, they are most likely going to receive a smaller amount due to the taxes and legal fees that come about with probate. One final con. If you, as the account owner, have a ton of different IRAs held at different financial institutions, which, by the way, is not diversification, your beneficiaries may have a lot of paperwork to fill out and different advisors and people to deal with. One nice thing about having everything flow through the estate and the will is that typically the executor handles all of the paperwork and actually reaching out to all of the different financial institutions. This means that the rest of the family only has that one point person to deal with and doesn't have to be dealing with people from all these different institutions asking for the same information and things over and over. When it comes to naming beneficiaries on your IRA, I like to think of it as giving your loved ones a bit of a gift. Yes, they are receiving their inheritance either way, but you are also giving them a more streamlined process, quicker access to their money, and more options as to what they would like to do with that money. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I so appreciate your support, and I will see you next Monday. Later, rich girls.